Essay 8. Today is turning out to be an inventory day, a see where I am on my path day. I don't know why. I just woke up that way. The fact that I got to start that work on my path in the woods, the one I take most often now, is making it especially satisfying. There are two my paths in those sentences. The second one, the woods one, happens to be the one I've made my baseline walk lately. If I'm not in a conscious choosing state, I tacitly defer to that one. It is not, I realize today, one that Carol and I took very often, maybe not ever in this precise configuration. That tells me something about where I am right now. I'm making a way on my own, if only on these morning walks. There is, in fact, one spot where I am literally making a new path. After I cross the road from the west, the connecting path on the opposite side is about a quarter mile up the road. I prefer to enter the woods immediately. I need to navigate a stretch of 100 feet or so of untrammeled ground down the hillside to the existing path. I have, in keeping with precedent in these spaces, instinctively chosen the easiest route between and around the various obstructions, down trees, protruding branches, little gullies, that sort of thing. I noticed today that I can already see a faint impression of that path. In another year, it will be an official path, I expect, that others will find and take, a fact that makes me feel more connected to, an actual contributor toward, the functional culture of these woods. Maybe that is why I think of these walks now as the foundation for my life going forward, step by step, mile by mile, day by day, my path. Not because I want it that way, but because that's the way it is. The other my path in the sentences above is in a higher level portion of my mental universe, the life path I have been traversing since last February. A vantage point, a rung above the one I'm walking on in the woods, from where I can look down and take a reading, not so much of the progress I've made. After all, I'm still walking the same ground over and over, but the changes that have taken place. The swift shifts that define the autumn leaf fall are a perfect space frame for that sort of reflection. Changes are constant and dramatic. One day to the next, they help to foreground process, transition, the this turning into that, which is the abiding law of a world geared, as I have been saying, around time. My actual time may have come to a halt, like a CD when it hits a scratch, the same syllable stuttering speedily and incessantly. But things still change. There may be humans who can stay at this higher path of temporal flow. I think, for example, of Einstein and Heidegger, who tried to crack time's deeper codes 100 or so years ago. But I can't. I'm just up there for a little while, then back down, here, walking. That might be a blessing for someone like me. Not a good sense of direction, generally. Prone to getting lost. Better down here than up there. The first thing I noticed today, heading up the hill, was how different the leaf litter was from even 2 days ago, when it dazzled like Joseph's coat as far as I could see. Today, the base layer leaves were already crinkled up, flaking apart, halfway down to dust. The middle layers had lost their differentiating hues. The range was from a dull, not quite but almost sallow, yellow, to a drab, not quite but almost dour, brown. There were still a few smudges of color smattered around on the top. The canopy is thinned out, about 3/4 down. The understory, about 2/3. What a few days ago at the lower level looked like a churning sea, today seemed silly spindly, the remaining leaves tacked up like scraggly sail tags against the all shades of beige backdrop. The air was so still, nothing moved at all, like I had entered a painting of the woods. It was soothing to walk through it. About halfway up the hill, this path doglegs down, hard to the right, an exciting turn because its angle is compound. You look down straight ahead and also, even more steeply, to the side on the right. I like the sensation there, a pleasant tippiness. Just as I took that turn today, I became deeply aware of the trees around me. They are more spread apart at that point, respectful of each other's space, stately, I'd say. You feel walking through them as if they welcome each other and you warmly. No embraces, just many friendly faces. I was suddenly moved to tears. Surprised, I stopped. I felt the deepest gratitude for them, toward them. They have been, I knew right then, my best friends through all this pathwalking, the daily ones, the higher one, all of it, there with me, for me, every single day, listening to me rant, understanding my sad silences, watching me laugh or cry, wildly, delightedly, quietly, all of it. They stand there, witness. They do not interrupt or intervene. They simply care, deeply, patiently, knowing full well my seasons will turn like theirs, better, worse, and back around again. Not rushing, not patronizing, not avoiding, not advising. They are my friends. They love me, I am sure of it, and I love them. You may think this is sad, that humans should do that for one another, that one should not go to the woods to find a friendly face, a kind presence to reside in. Or that I'm a sad excuse for a man, should try harder to make those kinds of connections, establish relations, create a better social network for myself. Maybe so, I don't know. My world just doesn't work that way right now, and it never did. I was with Carol and had a complete world. Now I'm not, and I don't. It's that simple. It doesn't matter whose fault it might be. All I know is that when I think of my friends now, the ones that joined me on my path, that stood up for me, stood with me day after day after day, it is these trees. I thank them from the bottom of my heart today. I don't know why I am still here. I don't think I would be if it weren't for them. I told them I would, when I could, do for others what they had done for me. Even if it's just to stand there like a man, like a full-grown man, and take the wind that comes my way, day after day after day, saying silently to anyone who needs it, you can make it too. I am here, witnessing. Or just like today. Thanks. I headed toward the road, thinking to myself that the rest of today was going to be down, all drab, like the leaves at my feet. When I found myself looking right at, and then up at, a small maple, maybe 15 feet tall. It had about 100 leaves left on it. They were the most mesmerizing, astonishing shade of deep rosy red I have ever seen. You might see something akin to this shade in a mid-autumn sundown, like the one I watched for almost an hour last night, about 10 different shades of salmon. Or on a mango, in that area where the red is transitioning toward an orangey yellow. But seen today, looking up, while they just sat still there, translucent in the light that illuminated them from behind, well, no. I knew there is nothing else exactly that shade and that I'd never see it again. I stopped, stunned, and looked long at them, this eruption of ineluctable color on a day destined for drab, and smiled. I could tell this tree didn't mind my meeting with it that way, waiting for a while to watch it. It welcomed me. Just before I turned to leave, I thought about reaching up, plucking one of those leaves to take home, to meditate on that color, find the right name for it. But I didn't. I don't know why. After I crossed the road, I kept thinking, well, yes, I sure picked one. Well, no, I shouldn't have. I had walked about a quarter of a mile in this vexed state when I stopped to decide. I almost turned around, then laughed, knowing how selfish and futile that would be, taking this leaf, which is properly waiting to meet its destiny in its own time path. Just another instance of the ongoing obsession we have humanly to stop time, fix it, go back to it, keep it, the good, the bad, archived in photos, mementos, souvenirs, leaves pressed inside books we never look at. Stupid. Time doesn't work that way in this world, and we shouldn't try to make it. The path is always before us, opening, if we let it come up to meet us, full face forward. Firm in my conviction not to look back, I looked right in front of me instead, and there, another tree. This one a small ash, maybe 25 feet tall, still flush with enough leaves to look fleshy and full, the color of which transitioned from a lemony, limey green on the far left through a buttery yellow in the middle to bosque pear brown fringe on the right side. Stunning enough to get visually lost in, which I did. So there, I thought. Had I turned back, I would never have seen this. At least not just this way, just now. So beautiful. It, too, moved me to a few quiet, happy tears. As I walked on, I felt a fierce, fiery, determined force steeping in me, in my heart, deepening my drive to go forward, which I did, strong step after strong step. I thought for the first time in a while about my rage, how refined it had now become, not that wicked firestorm driven wildly every which way by spiraling winds of fight or flight. Now, this one is more like the cool blue to yellow-hot flame at the tip of a plumber's torch. Not so bright you can't look at it, as a welder's torch is. But soothing, perfectly still, its edges blending imperceptibly into the surrounding air, which it heats just enough to do the work you needed to do, melting solder into the joint, sealing water where it should be, inside the pipe instead of all over the floor or the walls. I said last spring that I didn't think my rage would ever go away, transitioning over into one of the subsequent, much more boring, I would say now, stages Elizabeth Kubler-Ross names. Now I know I was right. The tank that fuels this flame of mine is full. I love being able to point its cool, hot blue tip wherever I want. This rage is good. It seals the leaks. It keeps the water where it belongs, flowing toward a purpose, or just waiting to be drunk. I can use it, and I will. During the last mile of my walk, I found myself thinking about the costs associated with love that I wrote about yesterday. Carol's first husband died suddenly and unexpectedly at 29. She found him the way I found her, a horror that never left her, just as mine will never leave me. She lived with a dread that she would have to go through something like that again with me. I told her over and over that I would not die and leave her alone again. That's a ludicrous promise, of course. Who controls things like that? But I was determined to keep it no matter what. When she was not well, I also promised her over and over that I would take care of everything, everything, if she went first. Everything. Calculate for yourself what that includes. I had no idea. No idea, none, how hard it would be to keep my promises. And I'm not going to tell you or anyone ever all I had to do or how I did it. But I did, and I will. There are, as I was saying yesterday, two different realities at odds often in our lives. There's the one out there, the one that's not optional, That part of it I just have to endure, like you do, clamped tight in those thrashing jaws every day. All I can say is this. On the path I'm on now, that reality stops at the tip of my nose and it stays out there because I want it to. You could do that too. Anyone can. I get to make the one inside my head the way I want it to be, just like you do. In there, people do right for one another. They care, quietly, patiently. They love, and they are loved. They say thank you, and I'm sorry. They say what they mean, and they mean what they say. They keep their promises, all of them. I know the world is full of people who imagine that same reality and try every day to bring it into being. Carol was one of them. You may be, too. Everyone else can kick up all the dust they want out there in the other reality. I can bear all the time I have to spend out there with them, believe me, no problem. All I'll say is this. If they want to get in here, where I spend as much of my time as I can, they'll have to take off those dirty shoes. On the drive home, I listen to my own voice on the car stereo sing some sad songs. I cried for what I have lost, for how Carol suffered her life for as long as she could. Like a child cries, not because of some great pain or some pressing need or some deep sadness. No, more like sitting on a stone, looking down at the grass, feeling the gravity of reality press in, thinking, if you think anything at all, I did it because I said I would, and this is what it costs. I pay what it costs, gracefully, along with a few tears maybe, if that's what it takes, because I said I would. And I'm going to keep doing what I say I will until my path, the higher one, the one I'm looking down from right now, this astounding spectacle of my life unwinding beneath me, with me in it. Until that path, once and for all, ends. Maybe I get to go up to a higher path then, from which what I'm looking at now starts to actually make sense. Maybe I get to go nowhere and be nothing. I don't care. I will love this way every day I am here because I said I would. So there.